Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to the Future Ready Coaches Student-Centered Initiatives webinar. My name is Sarah Thomas and I'm a Future Ready National Advisor as well as a Regional Technology Coordinator and in addition, affiliate faculty. So I'm joined today with my fellow FRS advisor, Brianna Hodges. So Brianna, I'm gonna kick it over to you.
Hey guys, I am Brianna Hodges and I'm the Director of Digital Learning for Stephenville ISD. And I am super excited to help kick off this inaugural webinar for Future Ready Coach. So Future Ready Schools is a project of the Alliance for Excellent Education in Washington, D.C. Future Ready Schools is a collaboration between the Alliance and a vast coalition of over 60 other national and regional organizations. The goal of Future Ready Schools is to maximize digital learning opportunities and help school districts move quickly towards personalized student-centered learning. The effort provides districts with resources and support to ensure that local technology and digital learning plans align with instructional best practices and are implemented by highly trained teachers and maximize personalized learning experiences for all students, particularly those from traditionally underserved communities. Today's hashtag for our webinar is hashtag Future Ready Coach, as well as hashtag Future Ready. Thank you for making an investment and joining us today. We are your host on this webinar, and with us today is Chris Aviles, Coordinator for Innovation and Technology and 21st Century Skills for Fairhaven Public Schools. What an honor to have you with Chris. Can you tell what an honor it is to have us with you today? Can you join us and take a minute to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Chris Aviles. I work in the Fairhaven School District down the Jersey Shore in Fairhaven, New Jersey. There, I am the 21st Century Life Innovation and Technology Coordinator, which is really just a fancy way of saying that I teach and then I have summer responsibilities. So I'm a 12-month guy over there doing some stuff for my district. I'm super excited to be here and excited to share my program and the things that you know, my kids and my district are doing. Thank you for having me.
Chris, we are super excited to have you here with us. So we're just going to go ahead and dive into the very first question. So one of our main premises of Future Ready is that it's not about the technology, but what you do with it that truly matters for our students. So you were very instrumental in developing Fairhaven Innovates to help students learn the skills needed to succeed in tomorrow's world. So can you talk a little bit about the ideas that sparked this program?
Yeah, so when I first got to Fairhaven 3 years ago, I ran a makerspace in the afternoons and I did tech coaching in the morning. And through that makerspace, I started to explore what does a technology program or, you know, what should a technology program look like? Just because I wasn't thrilled with technology being taught in a silo. And so what was really important to me when I got to Fairhaven, I first started the first piece of the Fairhaven Innovates program, a big piece that is missing from teaching technology, well, maybe it's a couple different pieces. Number one, it's understanding the fact that, you know, this idea of like growing up at the digital age and all of these kids know how to use technology, it's really not true. Kids can use technology to communicate and entertain themselves. But learning to use technology as a tool, learning to use technology as a way to improve what you're working on, specifically, I think learning the time and place to use technology is something that we really need to focus on. Things like delaying gratification and impulse control, when it comes to some of the things that are going on in the classroom, I think it's an important mindful skill to be teaching. So the way that I have found to do that is by creating a context. But what I mean by that is using project and problem-based learning to teach how to use technology, or even better, to teach the right technology for the right job. And so through my program, I don't necessarily teach, you know, hey, here's how you use Google Slides. Here's how you use, Word. You know, my kids find the right tools for the job, you know, based on what they're tasked with doing. And so for me, teaching technology in a silo, sitting down and saying, okay, everybody's going to make a presentation, everybody's going to make a YouTube video, everybody's going to do a podcast. To me, that isn't the best way to teach technology because it's, you know, it goes to a bigger problem that I have with teaching subjects in a silo. I taught high school English for 10 years. And, you know, when my kids came to me from history class, they thought there was no connection between history and English. Or when they left my English class and went to math, you know, they thought that the English skills they learned from me couldn't be applied to math. And so I think by teaching technology in context, my kids are starting to learn how to use time and place, how to use it for problem solving, how to use it for productivity, and that kind of stuff.
Awesome. You celebrate, it sounds a lot like you celebrate student voice and agency, as well as entrepreneurship in your program. Can you tell us why it is that? I mean, you've talked a little bit about, you know, it being in context and really kind of going through that, but can you also tell us what it means to you for student voice and student agency, as well as for your students as learners?
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting. I started the Makerspace. It was very well received by the community. At the end of the year, the superintendent came to me and he said, you know, what does this program look like rolled out on a full school level? We have 4th through 8th graders in Knollwood Middle School where I'm at for most of my day. And so, you know, kind of turning that question to the kids, it was really interesting. I believe one of the biggest pieces missing from the Makerspace is entrepreneurship, because kids are making stuff and then generally it either goes home or goes in the garbage. And it was by listening to students, you know, they started saying, it was funny. One of the most popular things to do in our innovation lab was to take stuff apart, you know, catalog what the different pieces did, try to put it back together. You know, the community was really good to me in donating older unwanted electronics. And so we would take the stuff apart, you know, being, you know, in 5th and 6th grade, which was the group I was working with at that time 3 years ago, you know, things didn't always go back together. So we took it apart. We learned what the different pieces is, didn't always get it back together. No big deal. But one day some students, you know, go to me, well, we have all this stuff, you know, what if we made artwork out of it? And so I launched, you know, in the Makerspace, the Parts to Arts Initiative, a project-based learning thing that they could do where they take, you know, junk and they upcycle it into something nice. So we went from taking things apart. They started to make this really cool jewelry out of, you know, motherboards. And I got them Dremels and they used to cut circuit board hearts and stuff like that. And it was really something very popular among my students. And from there, we had now jewelry. And the next thing, the kids came to me, they said, well, can we sell it? And I said, all right, let's give it a go. And, you know, the students named that business FH Gizmos in the Innovation Lab. I built them an online store to sell their stuff. And I think, you know, the end of that year, we made maybe $30, you know, probably from parents who just, you know, felt like they wanted to help us out. But it was exciting to see how passionate my kids became about entrepreneurship. From there, it kind of exploded, right, again, to the next year. So this would be this first full year. You know, my 6th grade business is called FH Gizmos. And it's funny as the kids came up with the Your Problem is Our Project slogan. And their kids form product teams to find, create, and sell the solutions to people's everyday problems. Then we started a 7th grade business called FH Grows, where kids, they learn to be stewards of the environment while they grow and sell produce online and in their farmers markets to the communities. And then my 8th grade class is a consulting firm. This year, we worked with 20 local businesses to help them, you know, grow their business. And students were able to use some of those skills that they learned. So student voice started from turning, you know, parts to arts to jewelry. And I now have an entire entrepreneurship, technology, 21st century life and careers program just because I listen to my students. You know, and, you know, technology is infused without. Kids are exposed to the digital arts, computer science, engineering. The backbone of the whole program is design thinking and making sure my students know how to tackle problems and system thinking, you know, break it into parts and making sure everything works the way they want it to.
That is awesome. So quickly, I want to remind our viewers that the hashtag for today's webinar is Future Ready and Future Ready Coach. So please keep asking your questions there. But I want to throw a follow-up question from what you were just talking about, Chris, on that. This is from Jay Siebert from Matt Laboro, New Jersey. You can probably, there you go. You can. I texted it up for you, so I knew I would throw it up there for you. But he wants to know how he could incorporate an FH Innovates style program in like a 2nd grade self-contained classroom. So,
yeah,
suggestions for him?
I mean, obviously, it's going to depend on your schedule when you see kids and stuff like that. But, you know, when I talk to teachers about getting into makerspaces, innovation labs, whatever the case may be, find time in your units, find time in your lessons, and ask the kids, how do you want to show me what you learned? and then let them build something, create something, video, podcast, model, whatever it may be, that shows what they've learned. Your other option is stations. Is always fantastic. Kids cycle through stations, exploring. You know, again, I've always found the backbone to be digital arts, engineering, computer science, with a focus on design thinking. So, you know, I think it has a lot to do with what he has access to, how often he sees his kids. But for me, my English class, when I was a high school English teacher, for about the last 5 years I was teaching English, looked like a makerspace, because at the end of every unit, after we knocked out the essays, after we knocked out, you know, all the things that we had to do, the last thing that my kids did, the culminating activity, was basically, how would you like to show me what you learned? And that's how, you know, video games started to come into my classroom. I'm really big into game-based learning and gamification. I'm starting an esports team soon. You know, and so all of that was just from student voice. And so my advice to him would be, you could do it deliberately with stations. You can infuse it at the end of a lesson by asking kids, and that's a great way to get student voice. How would you like to show me what you learned? And another thing you could do is you can kind of piggyback this into some time of 20% time project or some type of, genius hour type of thing, where kids get to explore and create. So at that age, you know, when I was down with K through three for a couple of years, that's kind of how we did it.
That is super cool, Chris. So you were talking about just so many things that just align with what we try to do as Future Ready Coaches. So just wanted to give a huge shout out to Erica Campbell from New Brunswick, New Jersey, who was asking about the role and expectations of a Future Ready Coach. So you hit on several of them, and she can find out more on our website. But we're going to bounce to our next question, which kind of talks to what you were just describing. So you've been a huge proponent of building community in your classroom, as well as empowering students to pursue grants and projects based on their needs. So I remember when we first met, then your class had just won a very specific furniture grant. So could you tell us a little bit about that, as well as any other tips you can share with educators?
So I wrote a blog post on my blog, Teched Up Teacher, not too long ago, and it was about being the COO, right? The person whose responsibility it is to take to create opportunities for students. And so for me, my mission is to create as many dare to be great moments for my students as possible. Personally, whole class direct instruction, I try to do as little of it as humanly possible. And so, you know, bringing people in, sending my kids out, you know, one of the things I'm really proud of is my kids have arranged something like 12 out of school experiences all by themselves, by emailing people, asking if they could come in to learn more about what they're doing, on top of the 20 businesses that my, you know, eighth graders went out and visited. So you're talking about my kids, you know, would write their own permission slips, get them approved by the secretaries and the principals and stuff like that at our school. They would bring it home, get them signed, and they got an excuse, you know, my class is, you know, back up to lunch in certain intervals. So they could be gone for two and a half hours out in their community, you know, exploring local businesses, exploring startups, exploring nonprofits. You know, we had kids go to soup kitchens and stuff like that. And so for me, you know, going back to, we got a classroom redesign. That just came from, you know, when I was in high school, that teaching high school English, that just came from a student who said, you know what, we're always having to collaborate in class, Avila, you're always making us group up and move and pair and unsplit and split. But I had carpeted floors and desks with no wheels. And so, you know, they said, why can't we just can we get a cooler classroom? I said, yeah, go ahead. How are you going to do it? And so, you know, their first idea was to have a bake sale. And then when they priced out the stuff that they wanted and realized it was the tens of thousands of dollars, right, they realized that they were going to cut it. So now all of a sudden they started looking at crowdfunding. We were on a Kickstarter that, you know, didn't do too well. So then we went to, you know, another crowdfunding site, and that failed too, right? 6 months went by, but eventually, you know, through sharing through social media, amplifying our voice, learning that digital citizen piece, you know, as we were doing that, they caught the attention of a fantastic company called KI Furniture, who, you know, very graciously came and totally redesigned my classroom. And so, you know, a lot of the projects, we did a huge project with Slack in September, you know, when a lot of people were trying to fight the fidget spinner craze. I had my kids design fidget spinners, and we were posting, again, amplifying our voice on social media. Slack reached out to us and said, you know, we would love to have you design us a custom fidget spinner. So the kids prototyped, you know, we came up with these fidget spinners, and it wasn't something we could manufacture ourselves. So then I had to get on, you know, on the phone with the New Jersey Manufacturing Association in New Jersey. They found me a manufacturer. They wound up doing it for free just because they were so excited and they wanted to teach the kids about manufacturing. So they came in, and then I'll give you guys a little preview in about a week or so. I'm going to announce a partnership with Skype, which is from the same thing. Skype and my program are going to team up to infuse student voice into Skype in the classroom. And, you know, one thing you realize is if you listen to the student's voice and you follow their passions, it generally leads you somewhere cool. And even though you may not always know how it's going to end, which I like, you know, I can see 75% down the road. I can't see all the way. But a lot of times, you know, you wind up being successful and success breeds success. And so, you know, the long answer to your question, Sarah, is, you know, creating opportunities, being comfortable, being uncomfortable. I don't have to be the expert in the room. I run an agriculture business with the students and you know, I'm learning alongside of them, you know, because I've never had a garden in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, there's something beautiful when I, you know, and, you know, hopefully they're not watching. I'll sometimes tell my kids, I just don't know. You know, Mr. Villa's had, oh, I don't know. Let's go find an expert, or I'll tell them, you know, I've taken you as far as I can. And, you know, we're going to have to team up the rest of the way and learn together. And so creating those opportunities and giving students the abilities, you know, I guess maybe the resources they need to be successful. You know, my district is wonderful. My Board of Ed is fantastic. We empower students by opening up email to the outside so my kids can email, you know, anybody out there. We have most social media open. We have YouTube open. So my kids start YouTube channels as young as third grade, you know, and it's usually sharing, you know, Minecraft stuff or sharing something they're passionate about. And as time goes on, they learn to take those tools, combine them with the opportunities that I found or they've created for themselves and achieve whatever success is to them for that particular problem or project that they're working on.
That is super cool. Just wanted to remind everyone who's watching right now that our hashtags are Future Ready and Future Ready Coach. But there is a follow-up question asked by Regina in Newton, North Carolina. So she was saying, with so many exciting opportunities in education, how do we encourage teachers, like our colleagues who might be resistant, to try new approaches or change outdated methods? Because you're definitely a thinker outside the box. So how do you encourage your colleagues to also be more out-of-the-box thinkers?
You know, it's funny as I wrote kind of like this little half a book and I have it hidden, that I don't know if we'll ever see the light of day, but it was basically tackling that question. And so for me, if you are a tech coach, the advice I give to tech coaches when it comes to resistance is you have to, number one, understand resistance is based on fear. And that fear generally comes from two places, parents and administration. Oh, I'll say three, parents, administration, and in my experience, a lot of teachers are afraid to not know everything in the classroom. So if they're going to deploy a new technology or even a new technique, if they don't feel comfortable using it, right, they may be resistant. Unfortunately, most of our PD in the world of education, you know, is sit and get one time and forget. And so from a tech coach standpoint, number one, do what you can to influence the culture. You know, my administration's fantastic. They support teachers and you know, should things go wrong, should things not work out, nothing like that's ever held against them. You know, we learn more from failure than we probably do our successes. And so that kind of stuff's never held against them. When it comes to resistance, you always kind of start at the top, right? Take your rock star teachers who are super excited, who want to try everything. And that's where you focus that energy as a tech coach. And I think that kind of bleeds its way down. And then in my experience, it's one thing to sit with a teacher, a group of teachers, and show how to use a technology. It's something else to be there when they use that technology. And so one thing I try to do is I try to be in the room when that technology is being used. So if everything goes well, I'm just, you know, sitting in the corner, no big deal. If things aren't going well, I can kind of slide in, you know, and be part of the show. And so just having that safety net of a tech coach in the room, you know, really has seemed to go a long way. Part of one of the initiatives I'm thinking about kind of, you know, spitballing with kids is what does a student tech coach team look like? And would people be receptive to that? One of the things that we're going to be working on with Skype is having students teach students how to help teachers host a Skype in the classroom. So that way, you know, kids could be in the classroom, you know, there to help. You know, I'd like to believe, I'd like to hope that teachers are excited to learn from students as much as, you know, students love to learn from teachers. But for me, when it comes to resistance, those are kind of the things that I had identified, I had worked on, you know, I guess in that area.
So, following up with that, one of the questions that often comes up when we talk about fear and things like that is, you spoke into how you have social media presences for many of your, or your students do, not that you have them, but that they actually are. One of the questions that we've also had asked out in social media, and I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I'm not going to be able to pronounce your name, but Adela, we're looking at you. This is your question that's coming in there. How are you kind of preparing that concept of digital readiness, that digital citizenship, as you tiptoe through these skills, you spoke into how important it is to have this presence, the social media presence. But that's also, I know I spend a lot of time with high school in my role and with middle school. And one of the pushbacks that I often get or the fear-based opportunities that I get from our teachers is, oh my gosh, we don't want them to get hurt. There's a lot of opportunity out there on social media for students of really learners of any age to kind of be hurt. How do we combat that? How do we empower them?
It's a great question and it's an important question, but there's so many just different layers to this that it becomes so nuanced to unpack, and I'll give you some examples. You know, I'm from the school of thought that when somebody Googles me, I want them to see all of the great things I've done in my life. I want them to see all of my social media that showcases all of my talents and all of my hard work and everything that I've put together, you know, as a portfolio in my life. And so I'm of the opinion that most of our students use social media.
Okay, well, I think Chris might be kind of bouncing back to us a little bit. I think he might have had a little bit of some delay there. But in the meantime, we're going to look at a couple other questions that have come in through. So Anna Beardsley from La Mesa, Texas, that's how you do say that, is La Mesa out there in Texas, has asked, how can I get clear guidelines and information about being future ready? Well, first off, you can go to futureready.org and learn about the framework and all the different opportunities that are out there for understanding and unpacking that framework. Look at the Future Ready Pledge that your superintendent can look at. And then that's a great way that you can kind of help get your campus or your district involved. Since you are here in Texas, I will also tell you that we are having a conference where we're going to be going through a lot of the Future Ready opportunities. So shout at me on Twitter and I will send you all of those details. We have several of our Future Ready advisors who are going to be coming to Texas, to sweet little old Stephenville to go through some of those things. So that said, I guess a couple other things that you can do about becoming, Sarah, do you have anything that you want to add on that?
Yeah, definitely. Check out the website, the Future Ready website, and from there you can find different events that will be going on. This year we're going to be doing something a little different. Last year we had our institutes that were going on. This year we have more regional type workshops. So definitely look at the Future Ready website and find an institute or an event that's coming near you, as well as more great chats, webinars, blog posts, all kinds of content will be coming your way.
Absolutely. We can definitely attest to, Sarah and I are, you know, big believers in Professional Learning Network and how you can really just, you know, the collaboration. Sarah is actually teaching a class. Dr. Sarah is teaching a class on this very topic. And you want to share some of the things that you're doing there?
Oh, sure. Yes. I just wanted to say hello to my students who I'll be seeing in just a couple minutes. But I see that Chris is back. So Chris has rejoined us. Hey, welcome back, Chris. We definitely want to
over here.
Yeah.
But not sure how far we got before I cut out, but to kind of jump back into that question, I think teaching digital footprint is as important as teaching digital citizenship. I think students, when it comes to social media, they know right and wrong. You know, where I think we might want to focus more on is the peer pressure that results in the poor decision making that we see with social media. And then I'm not sure if it came through before I got cut off, but so the way that I do that is through modeling. My kids, you know, a lot of my kids follow me on social media. They see how I post. I post an article about how to use Fortnite in the classroom. And some folks try to drag me on Twitter and they were saying some not nice things to me. And then I responded in a way that I would hope my students would respond, basically saying, hey, you know, I understand that you disagree with me. I'd love to have a conversation so we can learn from each other. Otherwise, you know, thanks for reaching out. And so with the businesses that we run, they all have a social media presence. I own the accounts, but the kids, you know, they do the hashtags, they do the posting, the pictures and stuff like that. So, you know, before they get to me, our elementary school, Sickles, does a fantastic job introducing formal digital citizenship and why it's important to, you know, kind of keep your citizenship and all that good stuff. And then so by the time they get to me in fourth grade, it's starting to say, okay, how can we use social media to take advantage of opportunities, to amplify our voice, to make a difference? And, you know, I do that through modeling. So they can see how I act on social media. I let them control our social media accounts for the businesses. And then, you know, by the time they get to eighth grade, hopefully with our new initiative next year, they'd be able to start their own social media for their own end up creating. And so, you know, it's a complex problem. I think it's not as simple as digital citizenship. You know, maybe it should just be citizenship and you know, really talk about how we treat each other. For me, I assume all my kids are going to do the right thing and I manage the exceptions. I'm not going to shut things down. I'm not going to limit things. I'm not going to block things because 10% of the right thing, you know. So for me, you know, somewhere in there is kind of my evolving view on how we need to be working digital citizenship into a curriculum as when a college Googles you, right, they should see all the great things you do. Or I was talking in a Twitter conversation the other day, when I have a kid, the first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna buy his name as a domain, as a website. And that's where he's gonna have, you know, or she's gonna have everything, you know, that they have a portfolio, I don't know. But I just think, you know, when somebody Google, I'll tell you, you know, real quick, funny story. When you used to Google Chris Aviles, it was a murderer from Jersey City in New Jersey. That was the first Chris Aviles that came up. And so, you know, God forbid somebody Googled me if I applied for a job. That's what they saw, you know? So.
Scary. It's scary. You definitely have to own your, own your brand, right? We talk about that a lot. So that's great advice. Man, time has flown in this inaugural webinar session. So we're just going to go ahead and remind you guys that the information on Future Ready can be found at futureready.org. We encourage and challenge district superintendents to join the over 3,100 others and sign the Future Ready Pledge. We also encourage our school leaders watching today to join us at one of this year's Future Ready Institutes, as Sarah shared, which as always are free for attendees. I also want to encourage our viewers to get involved with our new and growing strands, whether it's district leaders, IT, principals, librarians, or instructional coaches. We have vastly expanded the reach of Future Ready Schools. Check out our Facebook groups and ongoing activities for these strands. I want to thank Chris, as well as all of you, our viewers, for joining us for this Future Ready webinar. Don't forget to connect with us here at Future Ready on Twitter, which is at Future Ready, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Future Ready Schools. If you missed any of today's conversation, it will all be archived at www.all4ed.org/webinars soon after this webinar. On that page, you can also see a list of upcoming webinars, and you can find all of the Alliance's Google Hangouts are on our YouTube channel as well. For those of you taking part in the Action Academy badging platform, the password for this webinar is COACH. Thank you again for joining us here at Future Ready, and have a fabulous day, and we'll see you next time. Bye, you guys.